Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Wahoo and Toyo Review. Wahoo is much of the Gordon Law School in Isabella, Missouri, and Wahoo is an educational service of public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on sex and reproduction when we come back. Well, how many laws did Moses give us in the Mosaic Code or the Mosaic Law, and how many laws have we received from our secular government? Well, Moses gave us just 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, but our state and federal governments have given us 2.5 million laws. That's right, 2.5 million. Now, Peter said that we ought to obey God rather than men. He said that in Acts 5, verse 29. Congress said that we ought to voluntarily apply the teachings of the Scripture in the lives of families, individuals, and societies. And they said that in Public Law 97-280. Now, our Supreme Court has said that there is a higher loyalty than loyalty to this country, and that is loyalty to God. And they said that in Seeger versus U.S. You know, every authority is in agreement. Our Congress, our Supreme Court, and our God. The Scriptures are the final authority on law. Now, if you'd like to learn these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, and how to use that law against government intrusion into your God-given rights, remember that it's not only a right, but it's a duty and an obligation that we owe to ourselves, to our families, and to our society. And here at the law school, we teach these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, along with the penalties that go with the violation of these laws. And why don't you make it a point to regain your First Amendment right to free exercise of religion? And the First Amendment now is the gateway to the Second Amendment, that's your right to keep and bear arms, and indeed to your whole Bill of Rights. Now, the law of God may be old, but it's not old-fashioned. It's very relevant to our lives, and it's very relevant to our rights today. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now, the number 417-273-4967. Now, my Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about this thing of fornication, and so I flip over here in my Mosaic Law book to chapter 44 on fornication, which has all of the statutes in the Bible on fornication, and there are three of them. Last time we covered Exodus 22, 16, and 17, and Deuteronomy 22, verses 28 and 29. But there's a pretty long statute in Deuteronomy 22 that deals with this thing of fornication. Now, fornication is something that is distinct from adultery. Adultery is having sexual relations with another woman or with another man, for you ladies, and you're married. You're married. But what if you have sexual relations with another man or another woman and you're not married? What do you call that? Fun and games? That's called fornication. Now, fornication has a penalty, but the penalty for fornication is not death. The penalty or the punishment for adultery is death, but not fornication. Fornication is another branch of crime. We talked about that last time when we covered this thing of divorce. In Matthew 5, 31, 32, the King James translators translated put away and divorce in verse 32 as synonymous terms. They're not. And in Luke 16, 18, or Luke 18, 16, I kind of forget which one is which. Just look at Luke 16, 18, I think it is, and you'll find that it's translated correctly. Put away is used both times in the statute. So it's translated correctly. So sometimes it's the King James translators. There's 172 common mistranslations in the King James Version of the Bible. 172, in case you were wondering. How many mistranslations are there in the Bible? The answer is 172. All right, now, that doesn't mean that the Bible should be thrown out because there's mistranslations. It was written in a fine form in the original Hebrew and Greek. But when you translate from one language to another, not to find fault now with the King James translators, but that's quite a little trick. As you've probably seen on the Internet, you know, the Chinese, you know, will try to translate from Chinese into English. And then when we get a package or a product, you know, we read the warning label and you see all the foibles that come from those mistranslations. I remember the book, you know, called Grapes of Wrath in Japanese is translated the angry raisin. Boys and girls, there's a big difference between an angry raisin and the grapes of wrath. You know, but the Japanese, you know, they try to do their best to express, and if you
you use the exact words, you know, in Japanese, the grapes of wrath is the angry raisin in its literal translation, but it lost something in the translation, didn't it? All right, so from language to language, things lose or they gain something in the translation. Sometimes we have to take a little time to analyze it so that we can better understand it. Well, this thing of fornication comes into play here along with divorce. So let me make this broad general statement. On planet Earth, leaving out, you know, the solar system, leaving out Mars and Venus and Neptune and leaving out the Milky Way galaxy and all the rest of space and galaxies and all the rest. On planet Earth, just this one speck of sand and the whole cosmic galaxy, there's no such thing as sexual relations on this planet without or outside of marriage without a penalty. You got that, kids? There's no such thing on this planet. I can't speak for other planets. I don't know what God's doing out there. I just know that here on this planet, if you're having sexual relations outside of marriage, there's a penalty that you're going to pay. You're going to pay with alimony, child support, juvenile delinquency, divorce. You're going to pay with your life. You're going to pay with your genitals. You know, a jealous woman the other day ripped off a man's genitals with her bare hands. And you heard of this guy Bobbitt, you know, his wife cut off his penis, you know, with a knife while he was asleep. Boys and girls, sex is an extremely emotional. It is probably the single most emotional event in human affairs. I just can't think of anything. You know, you need to urinate and you need to go to the bathroom. You need to defecate and you need to go to the bathroom. You're hungry and you need to eat. Boys and girls, sex is a very powerful drive. It's probably more powerful than urination, defecation, and eating or hunger, probably. It causes rape. It causes murder. I mean, it's a powerful thing. That's why I said to you, you know, it's like nitroglycerin, and it needs to be handled correctly. Now, don't blame God because He's given us. I'm looking at my page here. I've got 25 subject matters, 26 with polygamy. Polygamy, I'll write that down, number 26. And I covered that with you last time, but I didn't quite finish this thing of fornication. So let me finish with fornication in Deuteronomy 22, verses 13 through 21. He says, if a man takes a wife and he goes in unto her and he hates her, and he give occasion of speech against her and brings up an evil name upon her, and he says, I took this woman, and when I came to her, I found her not a maid. Then shall the father of the damsel and her mother take and bring forth the tokens of the damsel's virginity unto the elders of the city in the gate. Now, let me pause right there. Very common practice in Anglo-Saxon administration that on the wedding night, you know, on the marriage night, the consummation of the marriage, that the female, while she's having sex with her new husband, puts a towel underneath her. Because when penetration occurs, there's a breaking of a membrane called the hymen. And when that membrane breaks, there is some bleeding. And some women, there's a lot of bleeding. And that towel, that rag, you know, you can call it a rag, a towel, you know, cloth, or whatever it is called the token of that woman's virginity. All right, so now, here's a guy, he comes out publicly now and says, hey, listen, I just married this woman, and she's not a maid. She's not a virgin. She's like these 14-year-old girls that go to high school in the United States. She's been out here messing around for a long time. And then she said she was a virgin, represented herself to me as a virgin. And this is why in Matthew 5:31-32, he says, except for this one cause, you've got to have a bill of divorce. But in the event of fornication, you do not need a bill of divorce. What you do is you put this woman away. And the only cause for putting a woman away is fornication. Now, if she's spending you broke, you know, if she can't control the credit cards, if she brings up an evil name upon you or something like that, you can divorce her. I mean, you can divorce her for any reason that you can dream up. But the only way that you can put this woman away without the bill of divorce is for fornication. So it's a very narrow limitation. So the damsel's father shall say unto the elders, well, I gave my daughter to this man to wife, and he hates her. And lo, he has given occasion of speech against her, saying, I found not thy daughter a maid. And yet, these are the tokens of my daughter's virginity. Now, like that bill of divorcement, ladies, this token, this towel, this rag, is a very important document for you. If you get divorced, you want that bill of divorce. Because you see, ladies, a man can have 2, 5, or 9 wives, but you can only have one husband. So let's suppose that you get divorced and you go out and you remarry, or at least you think you've remarried, and you're having sexual relations with the second guy. Your husband, you know, the first guy, the jerk, you know, that you got rid of, he comes along and says, hey, she's committing adultery. You've got to have evidence, lady, to bring into court. And the bill of divorce signed by your husband, or the bill of divorce signed by you with the return receipt that you delivered it into his hand, is the prima facie evidence that you have fulfilled that law, that you have your bill of divorce. Right now, when you marry and, you know, this klutz comes along and says, hey, listen, you know, and brings up an evil name upon you, you should have that towel, ladies. That should be something that goes into your back into your hope chest that you keep for all of your life. Very important. And they shall spread the cloth before the elders of the city, and the elders of that city shall take that man and chastise him. Chastise him. You know what chastisement is? You take that SOB out and you tie him up to a stake and you give him 39 lashes across his bare back. 39. It's actually 40 save one, so that you don't violate the law. Chastising. You whip him for bringing up an evil name on a virgin in Israel. That's how serious this is. And they shall immerse him in 100 shekels of silver and give them unto the father of the damsel. So there's a fine and a whipping because he's brought up an evil name upon a virgin in Israel. And she shall be his wife, and he may not put her away all of his days. But if this thing be true, now notice he can't put her away. He can divorce her, but he cannot put her away. Now, of course, he may not want to divorce her for other reasons. And there could be some economic reasons. Remember, marriage is a business. First and foremost, ladies and gentlemen, marriage is business. Business. Sex is not the reason for marriage. Business is the reason for marriage. Sex and reproduction comes thereafter as a natural consequence of this business arrangement. That's why in the case of Tamar, I mentioned to you last time, you know, Tamar was about to be aced out of about $50 million. And that's why Tamar, you know, our great-great-great-great-grandma Tamar, dressed up like a harlot, went down along the way. Judah came in, you know, the pillar of our family. Judah, you know, looking for a little on Friday night, went into this whore. He went into Flo's whorehouse, is what we call it today, and had sex with his daughter-in-law. He didn't know who he was having sex with, but he ultimately found out that it was his daughter-in-law. And then the sucker said, we need to stone you, Tamar, because you played the harlot in Israel. This is religion at its best. When a woman practices adultery, she's a slut, she's a whore, she's a dog, she's a rag. When Bill Clinton does it, he's a stud, he's a fox, he's something to be looked up to. Now, where in the hell did that kind of crazy nonsense come from, ladies? It came from religion. It didn't come from God, and it didn't come from the Bible. It came from your church. Those are the church fathers. You know, your church elders, they're the ones that dreamed that up. So don't get mad at God over that one. In fact, Jesus, when they brought a woman to him one time, and they said, we took this woman in adultery, in a very act of adultery. And then he wrote on the ground, and people have wondered, what did he write on the ground? I'm telling you, here's what he wrote on the ground. Where is the man? You can't stone the woman without the man. So they all sheepishly ducked out and let her go, and she was standing there, and he said to her, well, what happened to your accusers? And she said, I don't know, they all left. Jesus, the author of law, quoted the law correctly. He said, where's the man? You're going to stone this woman? Stone him too. Same thing happened with Jude and Tamar. She brought in these tokens. She brought in his staff and his signet ring and said, this is the guy that got me pregnant. This is the guy that needs to be stoned with me. So let's get after it, Judah. And he said, well, you've been more righteous in this matter than I have. This is the Bible's first instance of grace over law. Judah, the patriarch. Now, if this thing be true, if it is true that this woman is not a virgin, and the tokens of virginity be not found for the damsel, then they shall bring out the damsel to the door of her father's house, and the men of her city shall stone her with stones that she dies, because she has wrought folly in Israel to play the whore in her father's house, and so shall you put evil away from among you. Now remember, sex education in public school is a training ground for whores. Nothing more to be said. Sex education in public school is a training ground for whores. I got to read this to you again. I want to quote again page 28 from David Barton's book on To Pray or Not to Pray. Let me give you his name and address again. Remember this neat little statement up here? Girls understand now that they are far more likely to make good social and sexual adjustments to life if they learn to be warm, open, responsive, and sexually unafraid. They're learning to be sexual partners of men. They're learning to become harlots in public school. That's on page 10 and 11, by the way, of a book called, put out by Planned Parenthood, and it's being taught in your public school today. So you want to teach your sons to be sodomites and your daughters to be whores in a public school. That's the place. Now, God says if you find a woman claiming to be a virgin, marries to a husband, it's a fraud, number one. It's fornication, number two. Now, the reason in this case that the death penalty applies, in this case of fornication, is for the fraud, because he took this woman to be a virgin. So now look, girls, if you've had sexual relations before, then own up to it and say, look, I'm not a virgin. And there's an old custom that we use here in Israel that a virgin marries in white. Now, I see women today, you know, that I happen to have personal knowledge of that are not virgins at all. And then when they do get married, after they've been living with this guy for 10 or 15 years, and they run out and they want to have a big wedding over here, so they wear a white gown. That's perversion. You should wear any color but white. And the only woman that wears white at a wedding is the virgin, the bride. And those are her symbols. And then on the wedding night, she needs to have her tokens, that is that punctured hymen and the blood that comes therefrom on the towel. So that if anybody ever raises that issue, you know, lady, you bring up your tokens and you say, listen, that's not true. Virginity in America is about as rare as hen's teeth. But virginity should be common, and 100 years ago, virginity was common, and it was not common just among women, it was common among men and women, and that's the way it ought to be. No woman should be forced to marry some guy who's been out here catting around in some whorehouse in Paris. You know, mull it over. I told you about that lady, you know, that had one fling in her entire life. Talk about anomaly now. This woman has one fling in her entire life, one sexual relationship, and gets syphilis from it, and her nose rots off. All right, so there's that story on fornication. All right, so let me circle off fornication over here so we don't come back and do that one a second time. So far we talked about Proverbs chapter 5, verses 1 through 21, and Proverbs chapter 7, verses 1 through 27, talking about whores, talking about the strange woman, talking about sexual relations and the orgasms that come from it. Remember, marriage among humans, that is, sexual relations among humans in marriage, which is the place that this should be done, has a dual purpose. Reproduction is one purpose, but a bonding or pleasure, just for the fun of it. You know, sex is fun, sex is pleasurable, and they're not lying to you young people out there when they say, you know, sex is a lot of fun. You know, you're 14 years old, they're telling you the truth, it is. It's a tremendous amount of fun. God, you're going to love it. Just like old Doc Sansoni said to me as he was shooting me up with heroin, although in the hospital they don't call it heroin, they call it morphine. He said, you're going to like this. And then he gave me a very stern warning. He said, you know, when you're in pain, we give you morphine to take the pain away. It's painkiller. But he said, you know, it's so pleasurable that you're probably going to say, well, give me more, I'm really in pain. And when the nurse hears that you're in pain, she'll give you more morphine. But he said, you know, this stuff is very addictive. And he said, you'll become a heroin addict. That's where heroin addicts come from. They go to the hospital and they have surgery. Or, you know, for some reason they're in pain, they've had an accident or something like that, and they shoot them up with morphine. And when that guy leaves the hospital, he says, well, hey, I really like that. I'm going out on the street and see if I can't find some of that. So you got to watch out for it. Sex is very addicting. Sex is pleasurable. Sex is a lot of fun. But sex, as I've said before, is a killer. On planet Earth, there's no such thing as sexual relations outside of marriage. So the first thing you want to do is you want to get married. You want to be a virgin when you marry. And then you want to follow all of the statutes, judgments, and commandments that go along with marriage, go along with sex and sexual relations, or there's going to be dire consequences. And boys, if you're getting off with alimony and child support, you're getting off pretty light. I mean, if you're just paying money for your indiscretions, you know, maybe that's not so bad. And when you get AIDS, you know, that gets to be pretty heavy duty. And remember that AIDS is a sexually transmitted disease of which 25% of young people between the ages of 12 and 25 have a sexually transmitted disease. Some of them, admittedly, are kind of benign, such as chlamydia and genital warts, but some of them are kind of heavy duty, you know, like AIDS, syphilis, gonorrhea. And by the way, if you thought that gonorrhea is out and totally cured, there's a new super strain of gonorrhea that antibiotics will not, I want to repeat, will not cure. Super strain of super gonorrhea infections that penicillin and other antibiotics will not control, will not cure, and will kill you. Which is why I said there's no such thing on this planet as sexual relations outside of marriage. There are penalties to pay. 25% of our young people are now paying a penalty. I say that's a pretty heavy penalty now, kids. Don't let me tell you how to live your lives, but, you know, you should be fully informed, you know, so that when you go out and you break the law, you know, if you're a truck driver and some lot lizard's banging on the, you know, door of your truck, you know, and saying, hey, you want a little on Friday night, you know, you need to say, no, get the hell out of here. You know, especially if you got a wife at home. All right, I guess I could give you your reminder a little early that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our webpage. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, why don't you go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log, schedule, and archives, and can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, and a little slower, that's area code 417-273-4967. 67. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, they're accurate, and they're correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give, however, do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we do cite on the Law Hour are political, or they're religious, or economic, or sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans. And their viewpoint is not necessarily 100% endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Now, I mentioned this fellow David Barton over here. He wrote a dynamite book called America to Pray or Not to Pray. I cite from this book quite often. It's published by Wall Builders Press. I would imagine that's David Barton's printing company or a close kin or near affiliate. Wall Builder Press, P.O. Box 397, Aledo, A-L-E-D-O, Texas, 76008. That's 76008. They've got a phone down there. The number is 817-441-6044. 817-441-6044 is the phone number. David Barton, Aledo, Texas. Can't recommend his book any higher than that. And he puts out a catalog. He puts out a lot of tapes and a lot of books. This guy's a pretty prolific writer, dynamite speaker. As far as I can tell, just a hell of a good guy, just a hell of a fine American. And I recommend his books, and I recommend that you get his catalog. I think you're going to really enjoy his essays and his videos. I've seen a number of them. I saw a couple of his videotapes on, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence. A real historian, a real patriot, and just can't say enough good things about him. I've gotten some feedback. I don't think he cares too much for me, so you might not want to tell him that George Gordon sent you. He might charge you double for the book. I don't know that that's necessarily true, but I get feedback every once in a while. But just because some guy doesn't like me doesn't mean I won't recommend his book or I won't recommend his program, because oftentimes a lot of these guys have a tremendous amount of good material out there. All right, let's take a look now at who should you be having sexual relations with, and more importantly, I guess, who should you not be having sexual relations with, and that's over in Leviticus 18. In Leviticus chapter 18, if you can believe it, and I guess you can, God said it, so I guess we can believe it. This is a whole chapter on incest, a whole chapter here on sex, sexual relations, and incest, primarily incest. Now, I live down here in the South, and I am absolutely amazed. I guess I'd use the word amazed or dumbfounded, surprised, shocked at the number of incestuous relationships that go on down here. I say in the South. I'm kind of in, I shouldn't say South because that would include Florida and Texas, and I don't find it there, but I live in hillbilly land. I'm 65 miles from Dogpatch, Arkansas, 65 miles, and I live here in the Ozarks. And this is a region where we talk about Ozark hillbillies. Now, I wasn't born here, and I'm not a native here, and they recognize that, and so I'm called an outsider. And now my daughter, she's an insider. She's a local. She's born here, and she's accepted. She went to school here, and the locals accept her, but the locals don't accept me. And it's kind of a strange place. If you want to get right down to where the rubber meets the road, they call these people rednecks, and I'd say, yeah, that's probably pretty accurate. But there's a tremendous amount of incest. In fact, right down the road here, there's a family that's incestuous. And you can tell their IQ has gone down very precipitously. Yeah, I don't know what level they are. I don't know if we call them idiots or savants. Well, they're not savants because I don't see any evidence of any intelligence, but they may be morons, they may be idiots. But they marry very commonly down here, first cousins, second cousins. And oftentimes they will marry sisters or brothers, I guess, you know, sisters or brothers. And as a result of that, you get genetic deformities. You'll get mental retardation. You get all kinds of genetic problems that come from marrying kin that are too close. And incest. I just cannot fathom the amount of incest. That is stepfathers and fathers having sexual relations with daughters and mothers with sons. I mean, you talk about filth and perversion now. if that's in your vocabulary, it's here. It's here in the Ozarks. Now, I said South, and I want to apologize. That doesn't mean that it's in Texas or that it's in Alabama. But it is here, locally. Now, how pervasive is it? No, it's not everybody. It's not half the population. It's just that it's prevalent enough that you run across cases of it often enough that it kind of sickens and shocks you. And it's accepted. And the general population accepts it, and they kind of laugh, you know, oh, yeah, old Bubba over there, he married his cousin. In fact, there was one guy here, he married some woman who was next of kin that was in an insane asylum. I mean, she's mentally retarded, or she's insane, or some, you know, mental defect here, and she's in an institution, and he goes to the mental institution, gets her out, and marries her. And then, of course, predictably, their offspring also is mentally retarded, or, you know. And, of course, this is all sponsored and paid for by taxpayers through Social Lady. Social Lady comes in, you know, gives them taxpayer dollars, and they've got a car, and they've got driver's licenses, and, you know. And then God knows, you know, how more incestuous this can become. Well, God comes along in Leviticus chapter 18, and he says there are certain standards here that we've got to meet. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard this. Let me share with you an example of this incestuous relationships, and it's with Darwin, Charles Darwin, married a cousin. And all of his children turned out to be mentally retarded or mental defects or some kind of birth defect, every one of them. And Karl Marx did that. Karl Marx, you know, the guy that's the father of communism, and Charles Darwin, the father of evolution, at least in our modern forms. Evolution and communism have been going on for thousands of years, but they called it different names then in its modern form. And both of them practiced incest. And it's strictly prohibited here in the scripture, and God tells you who to marry and who not to marry and who to have sexual relations with and who not to have sexual relations with. And he starts off with the sex laws. This is Leviticus chapter 18. And he starts off with passing your seed through the fire to Moloch. That's verses 1 through 5. Now today we do the same thing. We pass our seed, that's our children, through the fire to Moloch. Listen to this. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, you speak to the children of Israel, and you say to them, I am the Eternal your God. After the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein you dwelt, shall you not do. And after the doings of the land of Canaan, where I bring you, shall you not do. And neither shall you walk in their ordinances. And you shall do my judgments, and keep my ordinances, to walk therein. I am the Eternal your God. You shall therefore keep my statutes, and my judgments, which if a man do, he shall live in them, because I am the Eternal. Now over in chapter 20, verses 1 through 5, is this story over here about passing your seed through the fire to Moloch, which is taking your children and killing them. Now, we do that here in America. We call it birth certificates. In other words, we don't take our children now and take the firstborn and throw him into a volcano, or take this virgin and take her up on top of the mountain and throw her into the volcano. Ancient societies did that, passing their seed through the fire. Today, we pass all of our seed through the fire and give them all to the state. We give them all to the God of the United States or the God of Florida, which is a crime, and it's mentioned here in the context of sexual perversion, which Leviticus 18 starts off, and he says, don't learn the ways of the Egyptians. These guys practice sexual perversion. They practice passing their seed through the fire. They practice incest. Don't you do that. So the first five verses say you're not to practice the ordinances and the statutes of the state or the state God around you. So stop and think about that for a minute. Now here's God comes along, and he says, don't practice the law of Florida. Don't practice the law of the United States. You practice my law. Well, we don't do that in this country. Here in America, you know, Americans are real concerned with practicing law, and they get really uptight about it. They buckle their seatbelts. They drive 55. They get a fuzz buster so they can break the speed law. All right, but they're meticulous about it. They get their driver's license and register their cars, and they practice these state laws. They get a marriage license and go out and marry in opposition to the scripture. Very meticulous about obeying the law of New York, but very careless about obeying the law of God. And so here's God comes along now, and he says, now listen, children, watch my lips. Pay attention to me now. Now, I mentioned that there's no such thing now as a broken law without a penalty. And there's no such thing as sexual relations on this planet outside of marriage without a penalty. And sometimes the penalties get to be kind of hot and heavy. All right, so let's find out what the law is, and then a little later on we'll take a look at some of these penalties. Find out what is it that you people are suffering from. And then see if we can't work backwards and say, well, if you're suffering this penalty over here, then there had to have been a broken law. Have you thought about, let's stop breaking that law so that we don't incur any more of that penalty? So in verse 6, he says, none of you shall approach to any that is near of kin to him to uncover their nakedness. I'm the Eternal. Now, those are close relations. And now he's going to go on, and he's going to identify these close relations. There are certain close relations over here that you want to avoid. Now, it's true that back in ancient times, you know, when Adam and Eve had their children, Cain and Abel took their wives of their sisters, and they got away with it, genetically. Something genetic has changed, because between Adam and Eve and Moses in chapter 18 of Leviticus, God comes along and says, now listen, children, you cannot marry this close. Same thing happened now with Noah. You know, when Noah got off the boat, he had three sons who had married three wives. Pretty close relationships there, wouldn't you say? And yet, from that seed, we see the world's population today. Now, something has happened between Noah and chapter 18 here of Leviticus. genetically today, we see from the experiences around us that when you marry too close, now you're asking for trouble. So you should be very, very concerned about the paternity of your wife or your husband. You know, how close of relationships, how close are these relationships? Verse 7, he says, the nakedness of your father or the nakedness of your mother shall you not uncover. She is your mother. You shall not uncover her nakedness. All right, boys, you shall not have sexual relations with your mother. You know, for most of us, that's, oh, yeah, that's pretty common sense. Well, God evidently thought, well, maybe common sense isn't going to cover that. So let me give you a specific, don't do that. And so here's a specific law. It says, don't do that. The nakedness of your father's wife shall you not uncover, it's your father's nakedness. So if your father has a wife who is not your mother, it's your stepmother, don't you have sexual relations with her? Now Reuben did. Reuben uncovered the nakedness of his father's wife, not his mother, but one of Jacob's other wives, and suffered a penalty. He lost the birthright. He was the firstborn son of Leah, and he lost the birthright, and it went to Joseph, the firstborn of Rachel. Now there's a cause and effect relationship, and there's a penalty that he paid for his sexual indiscretion. No such thing as a broken law without a penalty. In verse 9, the nakedness of your sister, the daughter of your father or daughter of your mother, whether she be born at home or born abroad, even their nakedness you shall not uncover. The nakedness of your son's daughter, now that's your granddaughter, or of your daughter's daughter, even their nakedness you shall not uncover, for theirs is your own nakedness. All right, now, we can get down here to half-sisters. You don't want to have sexual relations with a half-sister, genetically. She's half. We call them half-sisters. Sometimes we use the wrong term called step-sister. Now, in strict parlance, a step-sister is no blood kin. Now, I had a student in here one time, and he had some children. I think he had 3 or 4 boys, as I recall. And his wife died, and so he remarried. And the woman that he married had 3 or 4 daughters. No blood kin, though. And his oldest, that is his firstborn son, married one of his stepsisters. That's not a crime. That's not a violation of the law. He's not marrying a half-sister. He's marrying a stepsister who has no blood kin. Put it another way. Let's suppose that his father had not married this woman, and in course of time, he just ran across this girl out on the street and decided he wanted to marry her. Would there be any reason why they couldn't marry? The answer is no, none. So these statutes are not talking about stepsisters. They're talking about half-sisters. That is, your father has a daughter by one woman, and I've got one of those. Let me describe it. I'm the son of my father and mother. My father and mother divorced, and my father remarried, and he remarried a woman who had a daughter who happens to be about my age. Could I marry that stepsister? And the answer is, well, yes, I could, because she's no blood kin. But let's suppose that my father remarried and he had a daughter by this second wife. Could I then marry that daughter? And the answer is no. That's because she is genetically from my father as I am. A very important distinction now between stepsisters and half-sisters. Verse 11, the nakedness of your father's wife's daughter, begotten of your father, she is thy sister, you shall not uncover her nakedness. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your father's sister, she is your father's near kinswoman. Now that's called an aunt. Your father's sister is an aunt. Your father's brother, ladies, you would not have sexual relations with. That's your uncle. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your mother's sister, for she is thy mother's near kinswoman. And you shall not uncover the nakedness of your father's brother. You shall not approach to his wife. She is thine aunt. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your daughter-in-law. She is your son's wife. You shall not uncover her nakedness. And that's what Judah did. Probably instigated by God himself in that case, because Judah had married a black woman. He had practiced miscegenation, interracial marriage. And out of that, he had a boy named Ur, a boy named Onan, and a boy named Shelah. Well, when a white man marries a black woman, the offspring are called mulattoes, half-breeds, mulattoes. They're also known as bastards, and no bastard shall enter the congregation to the 10th generation. Well, the Messiah was destined to be born from Judah, because the scepter went to Judah in Genesis 49:10. So over in the chapter of John, I'll just put a little marker right here. Let's go over here to John, the Gospel of John, about chapter 7 or 8. Let's see if I can find it here for you. John chapter 7, I believe it is. I've got it marked, so if I can find John chapter 7, let's see if I can do that. Here we go. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, I'm wrong. It's John chapter 8, verse 41. He said, "You do the deeds of your father." And they said to him, "We be not born of fornication. We have one Father, even God." The Pharisees said to Jesus, "We be not born of fornication." That's exactly correct. The Pharisees are the descendants of Shelah, the third son of Judah and Shelah, the mulatto. And that's why Jews to this day have kinky hair, dark skin, black hair. Jesus, the Messiah, was a Nordic with blonde hair. Just take a look at the pictures. They all picture him with blonde hair. Take a look at the picture of Jesus. It isn't what he looks like, and that's not the representation of Jesus, but he's always a Nordic with long blonde hair. He's not a Jew. Well, he's not the kind of Jew that you're familiar with from New York City or from Israel. Just pay attention, boys and girls, to what's going on around you. And the scripture tells you very plainly, line upon line, precept upon precept, here a little, there a little. And here's a little more to the story. He said, "You do the deeds of your father." And they said to him, "That we be not born of fornication." So they're accusing him of being born of fornication. He didn't deny it. The Messiah comes from the Pharaoh's line of Judah and Tamar. Tamar was Judah's daughter-in-law. Strictly prohibited here, marrying or having sexual relations with your daughter-in-law. All right, so tuck that one away in your heart. "You shall not uncover the nakedness of your father's brother. You shall not uncover the nakedness of your daughter-in-law." Verse 16, "You shall not uncover the nakedness of your brother's wife. It is thy brother's nakedness." You got a brother? Does he have a wife? That's your sister-in-law. Leave your sister-in-law alone. Leave your brother-in-law alone. "You shall not uncover the nakedness of a woman and her daughter. Neither shall you take her son's daughter or her daughter's daughter to uncover her nakedness, for they are her near kinswoman. It is wickedness." Wait until you see the penalty for that. That's incest of the rawest, naked, rotten kind that I can think of. For instance, let's take, there was a guy up here in north of us here. I'm trying to think of the county now, up near Lake of the Ozarks. And he's married to a woman, and her daughter, who's about 15 years old, complains that he is having sexual relations with her. Now, this is incest with his stepdaughter. He's married to this girl's mother. Woody Allen did this. Remember the story about Woody Allen? He's married to this woman and he's having sexual relations with her daughter. A man having sexual relations with a mother and a daughter. The penalty for that is death. That carries the death penalty. A very unusual death penalty. It's burning at the stake. Not stoning. Burning at the stake. No shed blood. Boys and girls, I can't tell you how common that is down here where I live. I mean, you will read about that in the paper every week. Somebody is arrested in our area down here for having sexual relations with his stepdaughter. In some cases, it's with his actual physical daughter. Not a Woody Allen kind of thing. The daughter that Woody Allen was having sexual relations with was his wife's daughter, not his daughter, which is still a capital felony, which is still punishable by death, still punishable by burning at the stake, but a little bit different than incest of the variety where he's actually having sexual relations with his own daughter. Now, these are some of the crimes that God has said that he threw the Indians up for here in North America. He said with specificity, all of these wicked, evil crimes did these people do before you and I threw them out. And then he goes on to tell us, he says, now, if you do these wicked abominations, I will displace you. I'll throw you out also. And that's about where we're at here in the United States today. Sexual perversion in this country today is still not at the level of Sodom and Gomorrah, or we would already be toast. But boys and girls, we are working toward that goal of becoming like Sodom and Gomorrah just as hard as we can. I mean, I think that we Americans sending our children to public school to teach our daughters to be whores and our sons to be sodomites is on the way to a Sodom and Gomorrah-like end. I can't see anything good coming of that. Now, am I opposed to public school? I wouldn't send a child to public school if you paid me. They don't pay you to send your children to public school. They tax you. They charge you $7,000 to educate your daughter to be a whore. You don't need to spend $7,000 to teach your daughter to be a whore. Hell, you can do that free. Save yourself the money. You don't need to spend $7,000 to teach your son to become a sodomite. It doesn't cost a lot of money to do that. Hell, I think you can do that with a little imagination free of charge. Save yourself the money and all the time, effort, and energy. Verse 17, he says, you shall not uncover the nakedness of a woman and her daughter, and neither shall you take her son's daughter or her daughter's daughter to uncover her nakedness, for they are her near kinswoman. It is wickedness. So if you're married to a woman, you're to leave her daughter alone and her granddaughter alone and her great-granddaughter alone. Neither shall you take a wife to her sister to vex her to uncover her nakedness beside the other in her lifetime. Now, polygamy isn't against the law, but polygamy is prohibited in the marrying of sisters in their lifetime. So now if you were married to a woman and she has a sister and she dies, your wife dies, you could marry her sister. If, on the other hand, you're married to a pair of sisters, like the policeman in Murray, Utah, not only are you in violation of the laws of Utah because you've married these sisters with a marriage license, but you're in violation of the law of God in Leviticus 18 because you've married sisters in their lifetime. That's strictly prohibited. So if you had it in your mind that you were going to marry sisters, now notice here, it's not against the law to marry the sisters, but you got to marry them one at a time after one of them dies. Same thing is true with that stepdaughter over there. You know, you could marry, that is, your son could marry that stepsister. If you've got a stepdaughter, I told you that story. That's not a crime. The guy called me on the phone. He says, well, what do you think of my son marrying his stepsister? And I thought, whoa, that's kind of risque there. And then when he said, well, that's not my daughter, that's the wife's daughter. So, okay, you can do that. But notice here that the father here can't have sexual relations with that daughter. That's a daughter of his wife, a woman and her daughter, strictly prohibited. All right, we'll take it up right there next time when we come back on the Law or an Editorial Review, Chapter 18 of Leviticus. I didn't quite finish that one, but we'll do it next time. Let me remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in public interest. I see our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.